And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
So it's Thursday night after a Friday game.
That was a long, dramatic pause.
Well, I was just trying to think. It feels like a long time ago. I was actually struggling. It wasn't the most memorable game in the moment, and it sort of has receded a bit from memory.
Well, it is 6 days ago, and we are obviously selectively remembering it. But apologies for the delayed pod. We've just had a bit of a few schedule clashes on availability.
Well, you moved house. That's a pretty good excuse.
True. One day was, I think, your fault, but yeah, I think that's a fair excuse overall.
That's true.
And I think I would just apologize in advance. My levels of research are not at their usual mediocre level for this podcast. But the question I was going to ask you is, what did we learn from that game?
Hmm.
I've got a tale, but I'll let you go first.
Look, I thought the defence without Broad, Gibkiss and Tarrant just sort of lacked its usual versatility. It felt like we only had one option to play on everyone, and particularly their mid-size forwards were a tricky matchup for us. So, yeah, I thought. But, you know, then again, you know, despite Collingwood's poor kicking, it sort of feels like the fault lies more in having only 14 scoring shots for the game than it does at the defensive end of the ground.
Yeah, and just to put the poor kicking in context, because... Like, it was almost that narrative got over-exaggerated. Look at the end on the expected shots was a 5-goal loss, which I think is a pretty fair reflection of the game. But so the scoreline flattered us, but it didn't massively flatter us, which is at times what it felt like in at the game, I must admit. And look, I remember looking at halftime at the stat sheet, and for a stats nerd, it was like the Battle of the Somme. I think the first seven players on the disposal sheet were Pies were getting absolutely massacred in the contested ball. It was not pretty. And it was only minus about 9 on the inside 50, so it perhaps wasn't as bad as it felt. But look, to me, a little bit, I know Dimmer said it was like watching Collingwood looked like Richmond of old, as in, you know, the 17-18 team, because they scored a lot of our turnovers. And that goes to show how much coaches think, how they sort of look at structures in games.
Mm.
But I must admit, it did sort of... their midfield has given us trouble for years. And
it has. And it is a... You know, Nick Dacos aside, it's a very mature... midfield for, you know, they went in with an average age of on their team of 27. Like it is a really mature team, and we struggled with it, honestly.
Yeah, so I really think I didn't like the forward line. With the benefit of hindsight, look, it was terrible conditions for the first half.
Yeah, I wondered that, because it looked a bit wet on the TV, but the way the players were playing, it actually looked really wet.
Yeah, no, it was the first half, and then halftime it stopped, and the MCG dried out perfectly, and people started holding their marks. So it was a game of two skills.
Yeah.
And I know, look, the two greatest coaches of the modern era, if you exclude Clarkson, is Hardwick and Scott. And Scott Hardwick sticks with structures and doesn't play smart-ass duck games with selection, you know, last-minute moves like Scott does. And I know that Scott's last-minute moves and annoys Geelong supporters too, but, you know, maybe this... the grass is always greener, but this may have been a day for a late change, because that forward line looked... And there weren't a lot of possession players in the fort, like guys, you had Jack, you had Ryan, you had Mansell, and you had Rioli, all of who are low possession players playing in the forward line, and maybe just subbing out Ryan. Subbing out Ryan for the game might have been a good last second injury, but that's not the way Dimmer plays. So deal with it. Well, I have to deal with it because it was miserable on the ground. I will come to that though, because skill does rise in on wet conditions, and there were two players in particular who stood out. But yeah, it was forward line structure didn't help, but I can't see how with that midfield domination, how like we might have got closer, but it still seems that I can't, as much as I'd like to blame it all on these sort of peripheral tactics, I don't think it was it. And it is true, like Friday night was why you pay Jacob Hopper, right?
Yep.
So it was an unfortunate week for him to miss. It would have been a really good test for him. And again, would one player have made the difference? Probably not, but it sure couldn't. It couldn't have hurt, right?
Yeah. We had five players who weren't subbed or either on or off get less than 10 disposals. Yeah.
I don't think it's any coincidence that Swansea's come into the team this week.
He was so good in the VFL.
He was so good.
We'll get to that.
What did we learn? Just going back to the point, I think we've pretty... I don't know about you, but I think we pretty much nailed the meta-narrative of the game.
There were some individual bits and pieces. I quite like Sam, despite him being incredibly poorly suited to the conditions. I quite like Samson Ryan's ruck work.
Oh, okay, good. Nice. All right, I'm glad for that. I sort of, just checking how many heat outs to advantage he had. Three. Okay, yeah, that's not bad when he doesn't get that
and
much.
He had nine heat outs playing his backup ruck in a half. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, no, three heat outs to advantage and a half is really good work for a second ruck, no doubt. I'm agreeing with you. I'm not challenging your call. No. And he got rewarded. He got picked again this week, so obviously Dimmer wasn't too upset.
No.
It would be great. It would have been better if he played the second half, not the first. But such is life. Yeah.
I thought. Look, Noah Cumberland's had a really interesting start to the year. He didn't get picked. He didn't play with the seniors for the North practice game. He played seniors against Melbourne and was fine. Doesn't get picked for round one. Was genuinely not very good in the VFL in round two. And then was a complete burst of energy in the second half against Collingwood.
In fairness to his VFL position, Dimmer was said he played more in the midfield because Dimmer said he wanted to train him up in a different position.
Which is not crazy. He has played a bit of midfield as a junior, but yeah.
Yeah. Look, when he came onto the field, it was the same feeling last year when he came onto the team. It's like he's a breath of attacking fresh air.
Yeah. He ran faster than any Richmond player has this year.
Yeah, nice stat. But like just the eye test on the ground, like so that was when our comeback happened. He breaks lines, he creates chaos. Nothing wasn't perfect. He didn't, he had a few games last year where every half chance he turned to gold, but it was just the forward line looked so much better once he was in it.
Yeah, no, totally. I liked that. We've stuck with both Ryan Mansell and Judson Clark this week, which I honestly didn't expect. Rioli did struggle to get near it against Collingwood. Like I was extremely annoyed. He copped some criticism for Matthew Lloyd saying he needed to get fitter. Guess how many Richmond players did more hard running than Maurice Rioli Jr. did in that game?
Oh, I'd imagine none. It's because he naturally has protruding abs. There's an Essendon player who actually is quite similar, who I'm sure he wouldn't say the same thing about. So he looks unfit. He's not unfit.
No. He has elite sprint stats.
I bet you I bet he deads and squats a bit. Not that they're allowed to max weight, but I bet he'd lift a fair bit. Just on, Mansell's causing me some conniptions because look but like I think that's about as good as it gets, and he's averaging he had one sub game, but he's there are slight Steve Morris flashbacks in his low disposal count.
But he's
still playing this week, so he's got another chance. Nick, I have a story about Judson Clark. Not that interesting, but I think his sister, his half sister, was sitting behind us at the ground, and I say this in no way to disparage Judson Clark, but or to, I don't know anything about the sister other than she seemed very nice, and she was very enthusiastically barracking for Judson. So it's kind of handy because, I like Judson too. Nice. But let's just say they're equal chances to get invited to a Brownlow.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, I was very excited because I love Judson, as you know. And when he snapped that goal, it was to the punt road end. There was a lot of excitement in our general crowd area.
You look at our named interchange bench this week is Sonzi, Ralph Smith, Clark, and Cumberland. That's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun, a lot of speed. I like it. I really like it.
Yeah. I thought what I was saying about how challenging the mid-sized forwards of Collingwood were to match up on, I thought Ralph Smith played better as a last line of defence player than I've seen him before.
Something about Hugo that I noticed in the game, like nothing in his stats line shows out, but, in the wet, if it really stands out who's sure-handed or not. Like Shedder was always, Cochin all through, he was kind of a bit run by the way by the Collingwood midfield. His hands were perfect. The Brownlow genetics never leave you. And while your legs might start to fail you, he still has magnificent hands in the wet. And who else who was very sure-handed was Hugo.
Mm. Yeah.
I noticed he was classy in the wet.
Yeah. Well, I've got two more continuing on that theme. Noel Bolter, in really good form.
Absolutely. And we've gone. Oh yeah, amazing. And yeah, such a relief after round one, right? But we've gone a long way without actually mentioning by far our best player.
Well, that's what we typically do. Yeah, it's Liam Baker.
He was the best player on the sort of the champion data, not the AFL rankings, but the champion data rankings. He was the best player on the ground by a considerable margin.
Nice. Yeah.
And, obviously, 30s, plus 30 possessions, just doing everything. Wish we had two of him. Recycle comments from the last 2 weeks. Nank, I thought, was pretty good as well.
Yeah, 20 disposals, 39 hitouts, 7 clearances. Yeah, that'll work.
Yep, exactly. I mean, he was helped by Cameron's injury, but he was beating Cameron before then.
Yeah, no, he's in career best form, and I don't say that lightly because he was immense in the 2020 finals, particularly against Port, but yeah. No.
I think that's a fair call. I think at times we've accepted him as a battler and loved him for his efforts. He's playing extremely well. I'm concerned, Nick. We're up to 14 minutes on this game, and it was longer than I wanted to discuss it for. But is there anything else that stood out?
I thought Shea Bolton had his best game for the year.
Okay.
In a first half where we had a number of players go missing, he certainly wasn't one of them.
Oh, magnificent goal, wasn't it?
Mm. It was an energy jolt.
Okay.
When he went near it.
Question without notice: in the pantheon of teams you currently hate most, because I happened to watch the Brisbane game the night before, who's currently like that? They're forever enemies.
But yeah.
Of the current sort of generation, of the current teams, the current personnel, the current coaches, who's your pantheon of teams you dislike most?
Yeah, look, it's the obvious choice, but it's the Blues first.
Really?
But I think, yeah, well, just there's just so much baggage there, and particularly Carlton supporters. The Cats second for me, which may be controversial, but I feel like there's, you know, they've been our rivals through this era, and yeah, the Magpies only third, and look, the Essendon would be third if they were more of a threat, but I really like Craig McRae.
I've got a sizzling hot take for you, Nick. This is just brace yourself. For me, Carlton and Collingwood will be the forever enemies. They're our first hates, and they'll always be the most passionate. But right now, based on current personnel and how they play, obviously Geelong's number one, and will be till Scott and Stewart and a few others go. But the number two is actually Brisbane.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true.
They're lippy. They're all lippy, but, you know, there's a couple of famous ones.
Yeah, and they've got nothing to show for it.
But just watching them live, that Bulldogs game was so boring. And they were just... And Hipwood, he's got the worst invisible lat syndrome of any player in the AFL. I was watching him warming up, and he was just... It was
quite good.
Yeah, anyway. Thank you for indulging that, Nick, but that was,
I enjoyed that as well. I didn't have a great deal else, but I did just want to raise an eyebrow that, as we discussed in the lead up to this game, we are fans of Jack Graham, that our midfield looked a little one-paced at times on Friday night, and yeah, Jack Graham was part of that.
Oh, interesting. By your standards, I would say that's a pretty sizzling hot take, but okay, I will keep an eye on it. I did feel a bit, you know, like I obliquely mentioned it, but I think like Prestia had a terrible game, such as life. He's been great in other games. But yeah, it was, there's a reason why Koch is getting rested this week, I think, you know, other than natural load management. But I thought he was great, but,
I do think we need to nurse him through the year. Well, do you want to do VFL, or do you want to?
Well, you've already teased the lead story. I mean, 37 touches, six tackles, just speaks for itself.
Yeah. So yeah, Tyler. I didn't watch all the game, but a fair bit of it. And look, it was a tough, at times turgid, game, and in a Coburg. Coburg have recruited a lot of sort of mid 20 something suburban players, so they're big and physical and not very skilled, so they're the last thing they want is a fast free flowing game. And we certainly didn't get one. So, you know, you get these bonkers numbers for the inside mids, just because the ball was in contest so much of the day. But yeah, Sonsi was just a breath of fresh air. With, you know, he's had 7 clearances, 14 contested possessions, 6 tackles, which is a big number for him. But was just getting the ball. Like Thompson Dow was winning a ton of ball at Coalface. I think he had 18 handballs, but. Yeah, Sonsi was also really dangerous.
19. Now, you were close.
Annoyingly, the VFL app and the Richmond app don't always line up, which is...
Oh, that's true, yeah. Probably the Richmond app's probably more likely to be right. Go on.
Yeah, probably so. But yeah, so look, Thompson Dow was very good, but Sonsi had the spread from the contest. I will note to your disapproval that, you know, he was beautifully two-sided in his kicking, which I realize is Lear-izing for you.
Yeah, no, point out. Look, it's great he's back. And now we have Cumbie and Swansea starting, and they were the sort of the injection in the team last year.
That's true, late last year. So, I thought...
Sorry, I just wanted to pay credit to the second possession getter on the ground, which was Flynn Gentile, which is a fantastic name for Coburg.
That is very good. Ben Miller did his jack-of-all-trades thing, except at VFL level. It was pretty good. Biggie Newen was our dominant forward the week before, but he was good. We had first games for Seth Campbell, who particularly started really well. Definite eyebrow raised in his direction after what we saw in preseason and what we saw this week. He runs hard. He has good skills. Definitely something there.
But this is a positive rather than a negative eyebrow.
Yeah, positive eyebrow.
Is it the same eyebrow or is it a different one?
Different. Anyway. Steely Green, not a ton of 13 disposals, but he's so much fun tackling. Like, he has... I don't know what weight class he would be in UFC, multiple times he only grabbed his opponent's arm and he somehow sort of twisted it back so they couldn't get free or dispose of the ball correctly. And for a pretty much jockey sized human being, it was impressive. He's fun to watch. Sam Banks looked good, but it was the exact opposite of a game that you want a pretty fast, athletic outside midfielder / halfback. It just wasn't his day. But both Jacob Bauer and Kalen Brekke had 5 shots at goal each. Neither of them were dominant, but they both worked hard all day. And yeah, that's definitely worth tracking.
Okay. Did you see the Coburg played through Shade at Richmond VFL for promoting the live stream and instead suggesting people should go to Piranha Park to watch the game?
Oh, bless them. Yeah, I was going to say, I have a soft spot for Coburg as well from the affiliate days.
Yeah, watched Adam Brown and Jordan McMahon and other Richmond listed players at the time run up and down in Coburg. Never forget. Nice. It was Caleb Morton spraying McMahon or vice versa on the wing for being selfish. But, you know, that's a sort of a vortex of very weird football brains.
Andrew Brown has just stepped down from his role as midfields coach with our AFLW team and been replaced by Sean Hampson.
There you go. We've definitely got a type for our AFLW midfield coaches, don't we?
Yeah. Hampson still looks completely jacked.
Yeah, well, he's a social media star Sean Hampson now.
I've missed that entirely. Tarrant looked very solid, apparently not quite there yet for seniors, but yeah,
good signs.
Yeah, he's not a mile away. So other stuff. Look, there's already been a fair bit of it this week, but paying tribute to Camden McIntosh's 150th game, and I think his how much Richmond players love him versus, you know, he's got 2 Brownlow votes for his career and none in the last 7 years. Career average of 15 disposals a game. Like, he's a, he's a perfectly average AFL footballer. But I think Richmond fans, yeah, we just love him.
Yeah, and look, the sort of he plays a role, right? That whatever they, you know, that apparently they don't call it wing; they have some other technical phrase for it. But basically, if you want to put it in layman's common football, they sort of we play our wings very defensively, and him and Marlon do it superbly. And
yeah, like and they have absolutely identical career statistics. they both average 15 disposals, 3 inside 50s, and about 300 meters gained per game.
And you know, just to repeat something, like he's the ultimate fat's eye cover player. I mean, the switch is less important in modern AFL than it used to be, but he's almost one of one. If the opposition's got a switch on and the ball bounces before the player and he's going to get on a one-on-one contest at MCG on the wing, he's almost the best player. If you have to both cover space and then contest, I can't think of anyone else I'd want more to do that role.
Both him and Pickett monstering dudes in open space is just... Was it McCluggage that... K-Mac monstered on a wing once? I think so.
Yeah. It'd be an interesting test to who's actually got that, who's quicker over 40. But
they're both pretty fast. They both show up in both
the speed tracking.
Speed tracking and in repeat sprints. The Wood, even... It was a remarkably unremarkable start to his AFL career. Like, we only got the draft pick to pick him because Gold Coast wanted to move up two spots in the mid-20s of the 2010 draft. So they gave up what turned out to be pick 32 in the next draft. And, of course, neither of the players picked in the 20s. With the original pick swap, turned out to be very good. Henry Shade, who was a key defender, and the infamous Todd Elton for us. Yeah.
What's the rule then, that no one drafts perfectly? That's why it's better to have more picks.
Yeah, up to a point. But and then he doesn't play at all for his first 2 years. At the club, burst onto the scene in 2015, round one rising star. 2016 was going really well until he had his season ruined with injury. Yeah, and then at 2017, I did. You know, that physical pressure that team had. He was a big part of it. One thing that is inexplicable when you look at his career is him finishing fifth in the 2020 Best and Fairest, because his numbers were pretty much consistent the whole way through. But, you know, top five BNF in a premiership year, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So, Nick, you missed the obvious, he's got as many premierships as he does Brownlow votes.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So what is he more likely to do? Increase his number of premierships or his number of Brownlow votes? I reckon it's pretty close.
I reckon it's pretty close.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's worth noting how gutting it must have been in 2019 that he missed both VFL and AFL premierships. Like, that is a real kick in the guts.
That VFL team did look like a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I reckon clearly after the 2019 grand final, they partied pretty hard.
All right, Nick, Western Bulldogs.
Oh, no, sorry. A few more bits and pieces before we get to the Bulldogs. You know that I love tracking father-son prospects, and we've got another one this year.
Another one broadly defined.
Broadly defined, but it's another Naish. It's the third Naish brother. This one's Charlie, who's a 187 centimetre half forward flanker for for Northern Knights. And he's had a really solid start to the year. He's kicked a winning goal in round one. He's averaging nine marks, 18 disposals, nine marks a game, and close to, I think he was second best Knights player on champion data, so close to. He's certainly got my eye. He wasn't in the Vic Metro squad to start the season, so
not a top 10 pick.
No, not a top 10 pick, but he's
potentially list worthy.
Yeah, certainly draftable on current form, and looks like a pretty good athlete, and who knows how to play football. So definitely one to track.
One under 18s watcher I know suggests he needs to tackle a bit more, but
he's a skinny half forward flanker. He's probably not Robinson Crusoe on that one. And the other one, they had the what's called a supplemental draft for the AFLW, because because they played two seasons last year, they're sort of holding over the draft for 18-year-olds, because they didn't want Year 12 students playing during the middle of their exams, which fair enough. So it's all mature age players, and we picked a really genuine bush smoky in Shelby Knoll, who's a forward from Castlemaine. Obviously, Castlemaine's thought of very fondly by Richmond supporters. But
beautiful ground, Castlemaine.
Yeah, beautiful ground. She's kicked a ton of goals for Castlemaine. She's this is her first season playing VFLW, and she hasn't debuted in the first two rounds of VFLW, and she's got picked. So that's a long way of saying, it's a bit Kalen Bradke areas of raw and may take a while, but kind of fun.
Well, you know me, Nick. I'm always up for a bush footy legend. Well, maybe not even a bush footy legend, but the weirder the better. Anyway, be interesting to track.
Love a smoky. Couple other things. We're close to a 2-year extension for Noel Bolter, which definitely happy with. And Jack Graham, when he plays this weekend, will trigger a clause in his contract for next season. So,
that seems like that seems like a clause that was always written to be triggered.
Yeah, definitely so. Odd that it's so easy to trigger, but
why not just pay it to start with? Anyway,
yeah,
I'm sure it made sense at the time.
So the Bulldogs, they have not been very. Jamar Ugel-Hagen last week notwithstanding, they've been a pretty tough watch this season.
You know, it was remarkable watching them live. When you look down their team list, they look bloody good on paper.
I know, and they're a really mature team.
And Ugel-Hagen actually being good, although he didn't get a lot of the footy, but he kicked five goals.
Yeah,
it's like that sort of like they're just loaded, right?
Yeah, the average age of the team is over 27. Average games played is 116, like 15 more than us this week. Like this is a really mature team, experience and talent at both ends, high-profile midfield, and no team in the AFL has scored less over the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, that was a dismal game on the weekend. Yeah, it's just, look, we've got a great record against them, and we're strong favourites.
It has come in, which you actually predicted to me. It was down to 10.5 tonight, but Yeah, we are very solid favourites. It's sort of hard to work out. Like they're 18th for scoring, 18th for marks inside 50, 17th for metres gained differential, which maybe they're missing Lockie Hunter more than I thought, but yeah. And a midfield with McRae, Treloar, Bontempelli, Liberatore. I suppose they're missing Dunkley as well, but yeah. Ed Richards has been great for them off half back. Right. Yeah, weird.
Yeah. I must admit watching them live, my impression of Luke Beveridge went down. You pointed out before that in between their two grand final appearances, they haven't won a final. But yeah, there's just something wrong with that team. It's less than the sum of its parts.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely so. So Rory Lobb has to be pretty high on the list of most disappointing off-season recruits, given I think he's on about 600,000 in the ballpark.
Also, probably explains why we paid Ryan this week.
Yeah, he's had 10 disposals across his two games. They are. I think they're missing Waitman a bit, although Arthur Jones was a fairly lively debutant, but. Yeah, so their small forwards have been a bit down. We get Liam Jones versus Jack Riewoldt for the umpteenth time.
I know we don't, because Jack's rested.
Oh, of course, bugger. Oh, I was looking forward to that. It's always intensely competitive, but I never feel like Jack's completely beaten. They are big in defence, playing Alex Keith, Josh Bruce, and Liam Jones, who are all big boys down there. So it's interesting. We've gone a bit shorter in our forward line. I feel like Norton plays better against us than he does against other teams, which is a bit annoying.
Yeah, maybe. Nick, I've got a confession to make.
Yeah.
He's one of the better players in the AFL, but I despise Tim English.
He would drive me nuts.
He's good at everything a ruckman shouldn't be good at, and not good at all the things a ruckman should be good at.
Yep.
I appreciate he's earning probably $800,000 contract to do what he does, and he's very good, and you know he may be a premiership player one day, but I just don't think he should be allowed in the union. Watching him, he was giving up. He was terrible in the taps early on when the big boys are playing and the bodies are slapping. But then you look at the stat sheet, and he's been really influential. He's marking around the ground, and when the other ruckman tires, he's got great stamina, and he starts jumping over the top of them. And he gets a couple of beautiful taps. It's just something about him that really grinds my gears.
Yeah, the lack of physicality. It's been a thing for a while.
Yeah, that's it. I can't stand the fact that he's playing a finesse game in a
brutally physical position
where people like Nank should play like that. Yeah. If there wasn't for Soldo, Nank. Nank is your ideal ruckman, really. He just needs to be, Fremantle ruckman. They're the kind of people I want. Darcy, people like that.
Oh, Sean Darcy, yeah. He was great. Aaron Norton plays significantly better against Richmond than he does any other team.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Averages 11 disposals a game. Against Richmond, he averages nearly 15, and against no other team is it more than 12.5. It's really frustrating.
Good stat.
I think there's at least one monster game in there, but yeah, that's annoying.
So, aside from usual terror, how are you feeling?
I don't know. It has been a weird season, and yeah, we should talk about selection. So, Trent and Jack rested. Jack Ross dropped, which I thought was unlucky. I mean, he's possibly a sub, and as is Rioli, but yeah, I don't know. I'm still getting a handle on this Richmond team, and I think it is very much a work in progress. I think I saw somewhere. Apologies, who said it? But there was 7 changes from round one. So, yeah.
Yeah, look, and that's a sign that the coaches are too. Yeah, I give up. Like, there's clearly something I don't see that Dimmer does. Like, and dropping Mansell, keeping Mansell, dropping Rioli, who is not getting a lot of footy offensively, but is just the most, like. Who would you, as you're a attacking back pocket, high possession player, who would you rather have running towards you, Rioli or Mansell?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they obviously know more than we do, so
they understand what sort of role he's trying to play. I think it's 6 changes from round one. But, yeah, yeah, it's very much a work in progress. We haven't talked about Tyler Young at all, which feels slightly insulting for a kid who's only played 2 games, but he doesn't win a ton of the ball. But, yeah, I'm enjoying his work.
Yes, I might. Look, I think the fact he's holding his spot is tribute enough.
Yeah.
He's not doing anything wrong.
No, he's not doing anything wrong. And if you're thinking through, you know, that the end of the year, it's highly likely we'll see, almost inevitable, we'll see Tarrant, Rewalt and Cochin all move on, that replacing them is a pretty urgent task. And, yeah, that having, and Nathan Broad's a free agent, like having Tyler Young emerge and hopefully Gibkus can avoid any more traumatic injuries / infections. Yeah, the future of the defence will come into clarity a bit more.
Yeah, in, there's a few ifs there, but, you know, at least we have more contingency than perhaps sometimes do when you're dealing with some, you know, retirement of 3 players who are in, you know... essentially,
yeah,
like all 3 of them, not for us, but like they've all been absolute.
Legend.
Yeah, like, I mean, well,
and Jack and Trent, obviously legends of the game. Just ask Jack.
I'm just wrapping up on the game and the podcast. Like, I'm, you know, the Collingwood game reminds us that there are some trends that are consistent through history, and because. You know, for all the tactical differences, it still felt that we got blown away by the Collingwood midfield, which has happened multiple times when they've been at full strength. And we have beaten the Bulldogs consistently at the MCG. So based on that theory, I'm moderately confident, and I was not confident at all before the Collingwood game.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.